Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. In the opening hour of the program, in 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Bob Papa, who's the play-by-play radio voice of the New York Giants. Hour number two will feature Chris Price from WEEI.com, Patriots beat writer. He had some good stuff on today and earlier yesterday as well, basically breaking down the Patriots defense, which was certainly a huge part of our discussion in the playbook here yesterday. And so I wanted to get Chris's take on some of that for you and perhaps answer some questions. If you have questions for either one of our two gentlemen today, we haven't done this a lot, but I wanted to make sure that you knew that this was available to you as a listener to the program. Send it now. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us via email. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398, whether you have questions for either one of us or for either of our guests coming up at the program. Facebook page is open. If you're not a friend on Facebook, John Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name. Submit the friend request. We'll answer it. Then you may post, you may text, you may chat, you may whatever you like, but you can do it. Just don't steal my stuff again.
Right.
Hack into the account, please. You can also follow on Twitter at JRook, J-R-O-O-K-E 0722.
JR,
yes.
Before we go any further, can I just make a suggestion for our listeners?
Please.
As we talked about right before the show started, I believe both of us in our preseason going through the schedule prediction had the Patriots losing at Pittsburgh.
You are correct.
And neither of us followed through on that last week in our predictions on Thursday.
No.
So I'm asking the fans and our dedicated listeners to go back, listen to that podcast, and we both predicted 12-4, I believe, was going to be the final
record. Could be 13-3, but most likely 12-4. Yes.
So please go back and listen to that and mark down which games we predicted were going to be losses for the team, and remind us about that the week that we make those picks so that we can be consistent. And make the predictions that we predicted earlier.
I think I had my other two losses were on the road
Philly.
At the Jets, and I think also Philly. I think those were my other two. And I thought that if one was a win,
I think I had Denver as a loss at the time too. Because
you
of,
had Denver
because of
you
the,
did have Denver
the weirdness of Mile High.
Yes, you did have
the history
Denver as
of
a
the
loss.
Team there. So
I'm gonna say that you know. That's probably not.
Hold us accountable, though. Please hold us accountable. I'm not going to put anything past this team.
With this defense, yeah.
This defense.
You don't know. Yeah, it's very true. Unfortunately, it's very true. All right, a couple of things that I want to get off to right off the bat here on the show. In addition to our guest today, I have to ask the question. We've kind of talked about this periodically over the course of the last, 10 years, really. Probably more so since 2007, because that was the last time the Patriots in the Super Bowl, ironically. You've got the first regular season matchup between the Patriots and the Giants this week. First time that they've met for a game that really counts for something since that Super Bowl. Yes, they did play in the preseason, but nobody really counts the preseason at all. There's really even very little you can look at in the film, in the videotape of the preseason that would allow you to, I think, build a game plan for this week anyway.
No, especially.
There's really not.
Well, especially this year's preseason game, because the Giants had played. Remember, they had to move because of the storm. They had to move the game from a Saturday to a Monday.
Yeah.
Then they turned around and played on Thursday night against us. They didn't have any of the starters play in that game.
So there's really very little the Patriots can use to look, I think, at the Giants film from this preseason. Nevertheless, I'm going to ask the question again today. I put it out there on Facebook. I tweeted it earlier today, and I'm interested in your thoughts, because I really believe, considering, I don't want to say vitriol, but let's just say there was some decided disgust with the way the team performed, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and certainly the offense was partly to blame for some of this. But because of that, I'm going to ask a very simple question. I don't even think that there's a yes or a no answer here. What I'm asking for is your interpretation of this phrase. In Bill, do you still trust? Okay? Very simple. Like I said, it's not really a yes or a no. It can be. And if that's what you choose to answer, that's fine. But I'm going to ask you the question, and I'm going to leave it open to interpretation. In Bill, meaning Belichick, in Bill, do you still trust? Because we've sort of created the moniker here on Patriots.com radio. You know, in Bill we trust. And we began that probably as far back as what, 03, 04 maybe?
Yeah, probably about that.
I would say it's about when it started, because, you know, a lot of the moves that Bill Belichick and at the time Scott Pioli made, we questioned, and yet it still ended up in Super Bowl berths and or wins. And then since 07, it was kind of like, well, okay, we started questioning things a little bit more, but largely people, fans would say, you know what, okay, the proof is in the pudding. Yes, in Bill, I trust. It may not make a whole lot of sense to you and I, but the guy knows, the guy's forgotten more football than I'll ever know. Okay. But I think in light of the fact that this team clearly has some major issues in personnel, and now it appears that this team has major issues in schematics and formations and philosophies, I think we have to ask the question again, because...
And did you mention talent in there?
Yeah. Talent, yeah. Player evaluation. And that was part of what we discussed on yesterday's show as well, that they're coming up, they're swinging and missing at a lot of things here. And because of it, I think we have to ask, once again, are you still in the corner of Bill Belichick, or in Bill, do you no longer trust? So that's what I really want to know today. And if you still do, I'm not going to rip you for it. There's no room for ripping here. I'm trying to get a temperature gauge of Patriots fans largely still believing in the coach and the philosophy that has brought three Super Bowl championships to this franchise over the course of the last 11 years. And knowing that this is really still, in spite of the performance that you may have watched on the field last Sunday at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, in spite of that, the Patriots are still very much in this, okay? They're in the thick of this. They're 5-2. They don't have the best record in the AFC. They could have it still, based on being a one-dimensional football team. And I think we've already discussed this year, now that we're at the halfway point of the season, we're 8 weeks into the regular season, that it's a wide-open battle, and anybody can win this.
They could, John. They could easily not make the playoffs either.
I understand that. It could go the other way.
There's so many teams bunched up in that five-win-two-loss
area. It could go the
area,
other way.
Four
it,
wins, three losses. There's too much congestion there. That one faulty move later in the season could determine, I mean, the Buffalo game.
No question.
On New Year's Day could determine whether or not they make the playoffs, whether or not they get the first a first round bye. Could be huge.
No
question.
That game
could be, that game could be for everything.
Unbelievable to think that that particular game on New Year's Day could mean playoffs, could mean division championship, could mean a lot of different things. But it could.
And so, which makes these games against non-division opponents in the AFC so much more significant. The fact that they lost to Pittsburgh is huge.
Now they've lost the tiebreaker. You know, if there's a tiebreaker involved, they obviously would have to play at Pittsburgh again.
Right. Or if it comes down to a tie between the Steelers, or if they come down to a tie with the Chargers,
mm-hmm.
right? They beat the Chargers, so
beat
they own the tiebreaker over them.
Own the tiebreaker.
If it comes down to a tiebreaker with the Steelers,
they're
screwed.
They're done. And, you know, you've got a couple of big division games coming up. You've got the Jets coming up in a couple of weeks. You know, you'll have the Bills again. You'll have the Dolphins again. You can't really afford to fall in the division either. Especially can't afford, first of all, the Jets probably are still the one team in the division you really have to worry about, and that's, again, with all due respect to the Bills. We do come down to that January game, as you mentioned, that could mean something one way or the other. You don't want to lose that, especially if you could fall back into a tie with somebody. You could end up being Buffalo's ticket to the playoffs that day.
Now, it could end up that game means nothing as far as the standings
go. I think most fans
but
hope
I think
that
most,
that's the case.
Right. They all hope it, but I mean, realistically, that game is going to have some sort of significance. I think it's fair to say that game will have significance.
Mm-hmm.
Just the degree to which that is remains unclear, but I'm pretty safe in saying that that's going to be a significant game.
All right, you were talking also about, you know, the games that we thought that would be losses. I think that, you know, the game next week against the Jets is probably an L, but I also had the Giants game this week as a win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, based on
feeling better or worse about that given last week,
I'm not really feeling good at all, and I think it's because, you know, I'm still in a show me mode. Mm-hmm. I need to see some positive steps. The one thing that really hurt me the most about the performance last week was the fact that, you know, not only did you have a week off to prepare and you stunk up the joint like that, but you took a huge, huge step backward over what we thought were steps in the right direction defensively.
Yeah, and especially that soft middle against the tight end. They had great success this year against premier tight ends. Witten, Gates.
Yeah. Took those guys away for the most part.
Keller. They had done very well against those guys, and all of a sudden it reappears.
And Heath Miller
was going crazy in that first quarter.
What was the problem with the schematics?
Well, I think you had a combination of things. You had a couple of guys. I mean, first of all, you didn't have your depth was depleted when you got rid of Bodden and you put Dowling on IR. Now, granted, Dowling hadn't been much of a factor to begin with.
It wasn't a factor at all.
But you're forced to play relatively new guys in Molden and Adams who aren't, you know, quite yet established in the system here. You had, you know, safety. There were communication problems between the corners and the safeties throughout the night. You saw it on the touchdown to Antonio Brown where he just ran, you know, a little sort of like a wheel route there. And the two corners who were sort of in the zone coverage there both backed off him and gave him all the space he needed to dive in across the goal line.
Right.
I mean, somebody didn't do something right there. And that was a case of, if both guys are backing off, that means one guy thought, you know, I thought you had the coverage, John, and you look at me and say, no, Eric, I thought you had the coverage. There's a problem there. There's a pre-snap communication problem. Because when they're, you know, you see it all the time pre-snap. They're giving hand signals. They're tapping on their helmet. They're doing all kinds of things to try to get on who's going to cover who. That's right. What that's all about. Something went wrong there. And that was happening throughout the game. Molden was giving cushions that were far too big. I mean, third and long. How many third and longs did they have?
You know, their problem is, and we talked about this yesterday, Eric, but the problem is that, you know, I understand they don't want to give up the big play, but giving up three third and longs, that's not big. I mean, I'd almost rather give up I said this yesterday. I'd give up a 40-yarder to get the ball back in Brady's hands quicker. If we could get the god dang other team off the field defensively. You know? I mean, I just that just blew me away.
When you're in a third and nine or greater,
you got
no
convert.
Excuse. There's no excuse for giving up a pass play that big.
Yeah. I agree. Third and actually I would take that a little further. I would say, you know, third and seven almost. There's just really you should be able to stop that.
Here's what Hines Ward had to say about this to your friend Ed Bouchette from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hines didn't play in the game,
right?
But was obviously part of the preparation all week
right.
in the meetings.
Right.
Quote, I probably could have forced it and played, but we have some great wideouts. I wasn't really concerned. This is Ward. Against the Patriots, we felt we could exploit their secondary. That wasn't the same secondary we played against a year ago, having James Sanders, Brandon Merriweather. They weren't back there. They didn't have Lee Bodden. We kind of liked our matchups. So there's no need for me to try to force it and go.
How about that? Is that not telling? What he was saying was
there was no talent in that secondary.
I realize that it's not because of this, but everybody who told me that, what are you talking about? Brandon Merriweather sucks. He needs to be gone. Okay. All I'm saying is that you'd never know what you have until it's gone. And what you have now is worse than what you had.
I still don't regret the Merriweather move, but James Sanders was big in that game against Pittsburgh. Had the game-saving interception.
You let
at the
Sanders;
end there.
He's gone before Merriweather. So I'm not understanding the decisions and the decision-making process. And again, something we touched on yesterday because we don't get any answers. So all we're left here is to just sort of surmise why something may have been done. But this is almost inexplicable, which is why I asked the question today. In Bill, do you still trust? Because the proof is in the pudding. The secondary is horrid. The defense as a whole has all of a sudden regressed. After two consecutive weeks of playing better, you take a week off and it's kind of like, eh. And then they get worse again. It just made no sense to me at all. And if you ever needed a telling you know, comment in addition to what, you know, Hines Ward has said to the Pittsburgh media about the Patriots secondary. Ben Roethlisberger talked after the game as well about how we liked the matchup. So obviously he's echoing what Hines had in those meetings last week. And he said, we simply took what they gave us.
They gave him a lot.
And they gave him a lot.
They gave him the whole middle of the field. They gave him the edges on third and long.
And in that regard, the Steelers did to the Patriots what the Patriots have had a habit of doing to other teams. Patriots have been successful because they know how to adjust to what other teams present, and they take advantage of that because they have the key personnel mismatches, as we've talked about.
Well, now that's a good point, because we can't put this all on the defense, because when the offense and all its weapons goes three and out to start the game, three and out to start the second half,
then you're right. You're right.
You can't put it all on the defense, because now that offense is supposed to match Pittsburgh point for point.
Well, you have to hope that that happens, because you know that your defense is going to struggle. I don't know. You know, yesterday I said I'm putting it all on the defense. I said I realize the offense is somewhat to blame, but it started with the defense because they couldn't get the Pittsburgh offense off of the field to allow the Patriot offense an opportunity to get on a roll and gather any momentum. You know, Rolling Stone gathers moss, that whole thing. That's why I put it mostly on the defense, but I did mention that the Patriots offense was not blameless.
I'll also say this about the defense. They did a good enough job adjusting to keep the score within two touchdowns, that New England had a chance at the end.
Correct.
And came within a whisker of maybe tying that game or going ahead.
Correct. That should have been a 42-17 game on Sunday and was not.
And now I say, I'm sure you talked about this yesterday, but the Gronkowski non-touchdown was huge because it wasted another two and a half minutes that would have been vital for them to try to make a comeback.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if that's Belichick's call or if he was waiting on somebody
here's my thinking. Okay. If I'm the coach, and I know it's in the heat of the moment, but you know you have three timeouts plus the 2 minute warning coming up. Just throw the flag. If you lose the challenge, you still have two timeouts and the 2 minute warning. Just throw the flag. Ask for a challenge no matter what.
Yeah, that was a miscalculation.
That'll at least stop the clock. That'll give you and your offensive coordinator time to talk to Brady and say, okay, here's what we're facing. Here are four or five plays we want to go in the huddle with to make your no-huddle run a little bit faster.
And if you win the challenge, it's a bonus.
If you win the challenge, it's a bonus. If you lose it, okay.
You're still set for the stretch run.
You've calmed everybody down. You've gotten your things in order there.
It was a mistake made by the coaching staff.
By the coaching staff. Bill should have just reached in and thrown the red flag.
Can't disagree. By the way, it was a touchdown, too.
It was a touchdown. We saw it was in our end zone, because you know the way the Heinz Field press box
Field
is set
sucks.
Up.
Yeah,
we were in that easterly I don't know if it's east or not, but you know, if you're looking at your TV,
corner
it's to the right.
Yeah.
We were in that end zone. That's where the press box is. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting right on the 8-yard line. That touchdown was right there in that end zone. As soon as it happened, Brian Lowe was sitting next to me. I said, oh, touchdown. And we're shocked that the ref came running in and spotted it at the one. And you saw Gronk's reaction, too. He was in.
Mm-hmm.
His feet were in. The ball was in. He was in. It was a touchdown. And then it took another 2 minutes for them to finally get the ball in there. I mean, that changed the momentum of the game a little bit there, because I think the defense at that point was playing well enough that they might have been able to come up with a stop and force a punt. Because you saw, inexplicably, Pittsburgh, all they have to do is just keep running the ball. They decide to throw it on two consecutive plays that they got sacked and lost.
I kept thinking Pittsburgh is going to hand them this game.
Or at least kick a field goal.
Yeah, I kept thinking.
And they got out of field goal range.
Yeah, I know.
I thought for sure Roethlisberger was going to fumble and they were going to scoop and score. And that was going to be the end of the game. Because you know the way he is. He doesn't always have the best hands back there when he's scrambling around.
Well, as much as we've been hammering on the Patriots defense primarily, and you might have seen this as well, because it's been on NFL.com. I think the Boston Herald had the original story. Rodney Harrison, yes, the former Patriots safety, now of NBC Sports. His quote is, talking about the Patriots defense, I hate it. I don't like it at all. That scheme doesn't work for me. When you play a good offense, a team that spreads you out, there's just too many openings in zone coverage. You have to mix in man-to-man. You have to become more creative on defense. You have to disguise and bring more pressure. Then I look at that secondary, and they're playing really soft coverage, that bend-but-don't-break defense. I hate that.
Bend-but-don't-break?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
of course,
yeah.
They did a lot of that when he was still playing.
Yeah.
So if he says that he hates that, then you realize how soft they really are now
because here's
without
the
him in there.
Here's the difference. That those teams that he was on had talent.
And they don't
make,
have
they could make plays when they needed to.
Right. In other words, make stops and get teams off the field on third and 15.
Or come up with the vital interception in the end zone.
Right.
Or come up with the turnover, the forced fumble, the sack. They don't have that consistently with this team.
But he did say, you got to mix in, man, with the zone. We're trying to get this team to play more zone because in man, they can't do it. They don't have the personnel to play man.
Yeah, and I think we saw on that touchdown that I mentioned about Antonio Brown, that was a zone coverage, and somebody screwed up.
Yeah, that's right.
And afterwards, some of the players, like Kyle Arrington and Chung and some of the secondary guys who spoke to us said, we were trying to do some different things, but they might not be at the point where...
They can't execute it.
They can't execute it because there are guys who are so new to the system. There are guys who have only been here since September 1st.
Can't execute it. You got to become more creative on defense. Yet we don't... When was the last time we saw a real blitz package?
There were a few, but nothing substantial.
That's what I'm saying. You got to disguise and bring more pressure. This team is plain Jane vanilla.
I think they don't do it because they know they can't afford to.
Well, but you got to do something because they got picked apart by Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, they got picked apart by him.
Yeah.
And people like to bang on him for being, you know, not creative. And that was a walking wounded Pittsburgh team the Patriots got pummeled by. What are the Jets going to do? What are the Giants going to do this week? What are the Jets going to do in 2 weeks? I mean, you know, this could get real ugly. You're absolutely right when you say this team could not make the playoffs.
It's possible.
Unless there's significant improvement. And it's got to start with personnel, which is, you know, Lee Bodden, I mean, he obviously did something really, really wrong to not be on this team any longer.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, that's why I asked the question today in Bill, do you still trust? Email us, webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398. Please submit on Facebook if you can. In fact, let me get one here real quick before we get to a break. Steve says on Facebook, he says, it hasn't been in Bill I Trust for about 2 to 3 years now. Lately, it's been in Brady I Trust to make up for the incompetence of the quote-unquote defensive coordinator. To further elaborate, the GM can't pick the players the team needs, and the coordinator and coach can't make it happen with the players the GM picks. All things point to somebody not, quote, doing his job in nearly all facets of the man's responsibilities. Is that too harsh? It is what it is.
Oh, well done. Well done.
That's an excellent, excellent comment, Steve, and that's why I asked the question today. Because I think more and more we're realizing, and I've used this, you know, cliche before, but it's appropriate. That's why I think that the emperor's clothes have fallen off. I don't think he's wearing any anymore, to be quite honest with you. The bloom is off the blossom, whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, whatever's working and has worked in the past ain't working now. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-298-0398. We're waiting for your comments on Bill, do you still trust? Anything else on your mind? Bring it up. We're going to take a break. Bob Papa of the New York Giants comes up in the playbook.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you. From Boston sports to concert and theater, whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. You're a business traveler who's flying away. You can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats, including legroom galore, to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only. Drive.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pabs! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pabs!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pabs!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back inside the Playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino, and hopefully moments away from getting Bob Papa on the program with us. We want to start talking about the Giants. Some of the guys, in fact, in New York, already kind of giving their perspective, which we'll grab in just a couple of moments here. And Bob Papa joined us now in the Playbook. Bob, it's John and Eric. Thanks for taking some time today.
Guys, how are you this afternoon?
Awesome. Hey, thanks. Bob. Giants 5-2, just like the Patriots, but why do we get the distinct impression, at least from a New England perspective, that these teams are kind of traveling in opposite directions right now? Seems like the Giants might be on a little bit more of a roll themselves, but Patriots are still reeling a little bit from the beating I think they took this last Sunday in Pittsburgh.
It's funny, I guess it depends on what city you're in, because a lot of people are looking at the Giants and saying, well, so what? Under Coughlin in September and October, he's got a winning percentage of 74%. He's 42-15. It's the end of the season swoons that they've had the last couple of years. And considering that their schedule is a lot harder, a lot of people are not real believers in the Giants 5-2 record right now. Their bone of contention is, we are 5-2, and we can pass the football, and we can do some pretty good things like sack the quarterback, so give us some credit. So in New York, a lot of people aren't believers in the Giants right now, and believe it or not, a lot of people in New York are very big believers in the Patriots.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I think when you deal with the Giant fan base in this area, not the Jet fan base, but the Giant fan base, There's always going to be that connection to Bill Belichick. And, you know, Bill came down this past June when the Giants had their 25-year anniversary of their Super Bowl championship team. He took part in all the festivities, all the Q&A. He sat down with me for a, it was about a 60-minute TV interview in which his story will be told in the Giants Legacy Club, his years with the Giants. So he kind of goes into that sort of pantheon of great coordinators with Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi. So I think Giants fans will always be grateful for the defense that he devised and his former players that all live in this area. You know, the guys from 86 and 90 can't speak highly enough of him. So I think Giant fans actually feel a little kinship with Bill Belichick.
What do you identify right now, Bob, as a priority issue with this Giant football team?
Boy, you know, it's really interesting because when you think about this Giants team over the last 7-8 years, you think about a team that one thing they can do is run the football.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing they can't do right now. They are ranked 31st in the NFL in yards per carry. They're at their lowest output that they've been in years through the first 7 games. And they're really struggling to move the football on the ground. That's problem number one. Problem number two, they're not doing a very good job of stopping the run, which is another calling card for this franchise. Heck, going back into the 50s. And they have just given up a lot of big runs. They've given 7 runs up of 20 or more yards this year. And heck, they let Reggie Bush run for 100 yards, which has only happened twice in his career, coincidentally both times against the Giants. So the concern is that at the point of attack, the most important part of the football game, they're losing on both sides of the line.
I have a question for you, Bob, about Eli Manning. I think the perception, at least around these parts, is that he was lucky to win a Super Bowl, but he's nowhere near as good as his older brother. Are Giants fans, people who follow the Giants, are they believers in Eli Manning?
Yeah, they are believers in Eli Manning. And I feel bad for him in one respect, externally. He can't be as good as his brother. I mean, his brother is, he's being compared to a ridiculous standard, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, sure. He's being compared to one of the greats of any generation who happens to be his brother. But if you look at what he's put up, you know, over his 8 years as a starting quarterback with the Giants, I don't know, his record, overall record is like 69 and 42 or something like that. And he's the only quarterback in franchise history to lead his team to 4 straight postseasons. He did win the Super Bowl. He's putting up crazy numbers. I mean, he threw 31 touchdowns last year. I know everyone's talking about the interceptions, but that was more of an aberration, because in 08 and 09 combined, he threw less interceptions in those 2 years than he did all of last year. It was working in new receivers. There were a lot of tip balls. He forced it a little bit, maybe trying not to take sacks. And what he's done is he's gone to work and he figured out what he was doing wrong. And he's improved it dramatically. You know, he's got 5 this year, and he's playing real smart football while he's trying to bring along a very young receiving core. They put as much on him as Peyton has put on him in Indianapolis as far as coaching these guys up, and when that play comes in, he's got the whole playbook at his arsenal. He's calling protections. He's calling in and out of runs, which side the run is, audibilizing to a pass, audibilizing out of passes to runs. He's got full autonomy of the offense, and that's a pretty big burden, and he's had that since he got here.
Bob Papa, the radio voice of the New York Giants, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Is it an oversimplification to say that because of the team's struggles running the football, that the defense has done more than its fair share of carrying this team to a 5-2 start? And I say that because they've done pretty well on third down. They've done pretty well with turnover differential as well. I think they're in the top 5 or 6 now in the NFL in turnover differential. How much does that, do those numbers in particular, help this team where they are right now?
Well, you know, you can look at the numbers and you can maybe draw that conclusion, but if you watch them game in and game out, each side of the ball has had their fair share of shortcomings,
mm-hmm.
and each side of their ball has had their fair share of success as far as when the offense has made some mistakes or they haven't been able to run the clock out like they did last week when they had the lead and 4 minutes to go. What did the defense do? They dialed up 3 straight sacks. You know, and they ended the game then with an interception. There have been other games this year where the defense hasn't been able to stop anybody. And whether it's the game against Arizona or the game against Buffalo or the game this past week against Miami, they need the offense to come back and win the game. So I think they've been very complementary of each other. But to say that one side of the ball is carrying the other would be probably not accurate. The thing that you would say is the pass rush is carrying the run defense, and Eli and the passing game are carrying an anemic running offense.
I'm glad you brought up the pass rush, because I had a question for you about how they're employing Jason Pierre-Paul,
mm-hmm.
and Osa Umenyiora, because both of those guys have pretty decent sack totals. But when I'm putting the depth chart together for our preview last week of this game, I see that they have Pierre-Paul listed as the backup to Umenyiora. So how are they working him in to get the kind of production that they've gotten out of him this year?
Well, Umenyiora is coming off a knee injury, mm-hmm. and he missed the first couple of games when Jason Pierre-Paul started. And then when Tuck got hurt, he went over to Tuck's spot,
okay.
and OC started. Right now, their set depth chart, you know, on the piece of paper would be Tuck at one end and Umenyiora at the other. But you'll see those guys rotate in and out. You might see Jason Pierre-Paul start. And then if they get you in what's considered obvious pass situations, you know, they'll move Justin Tuck or Jason Pierre-Paul to nose tackle, and then they'll have Umenyiora and either Pierre-Paul or Tuck on the outside. And sometimes they'll even put Matthias Kiwanuka in a down stance, in a three-point stance, and they'll rush four that way. Or maybe Tuck will stand up, Kiwanuka goes down, and then they sort of blitz gaps that way. So they've been able to get all four guys on the field a lot at the same time when they've all been healthy. But they've been just kind of beaten on left tackles and right tackles, and they're not doing a whole lot of blitzing. I mean, they're getting a lot of the sack total that they have, the 26 sacks, which leads the league. They're doing it pretty much with a four-man rush, maybe sending a linebacker, but that's about it.
So Pierre-Paul's numbers, which look eye-popping, considering that he's technically a backup part-timer, he's been doing it basically on individual one-on-one matchups against either the right or the left tackle?
Yeah, pretty much so. And, you know, the first two games of the year, Umenyiora did not play because of his surgery during training camp. So he started, and then when Tuck hurt his groin and his shoulder, mm-hmm. and he missed three games, then Pierre-Paul took Tuck's spot, wow. and OC played. So, I mean, he's done it a lot in the regular defense. He's had some monster games. I mean, he hasn't even scratched the surface of how good he could be, but if you guys ever had a chance to stand next to him, he's gigantic mm-hmm. with not an ounce of fat on him, and he's so strong and so athletic, it's crazy.
Any idea how OC is? I realize the injury report didn't come out yet, but he hurt his shoulder again last week?
Yeah, he did. Tom Coughlin said that he's getting better each day. He was not expected to practice today, but they're really not that concerned with the shoulder of Umenyiora.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you probably, I mean, certainly saw some of the clips, the highlights of what Pittsburgh did to New England, and it seems to be following sort of the game plan, not completely dissimilar to what New York did to New England in the 2007-2008 Super Bowl. Do you feel like maybe that's still the book, and do you feel like the Giants still feel like that's how you have to beat New England, is with, you know, at least apply some pressure to Brady and then keep the ball out of his hands on offense?
Yeah, you know, I watched the game last night on the coach's tape, and, you know, I was very impressed with what Pittsburgh did. I mean, they had a good plan, but, you know, in order to have that good, you know, all the teams can come up with the same plan for the most part,
mm-hmm.
but you gotta have the players to be able to do it. And, you know, Seattle, I'm sure, could come up with that plan too, but they don't have the guys to do it. I think what gives the Giants a real fighting chance in this is the fact that they can generate a lot of pressure on the quarterback and not have to blitz a lot of people. I mean, you know, one of the things that all these elite quarterbacks, the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's and Drew Brees's, Aaron Rodgers, they all love it when teams blitz, because they feel that they can identify what's going on, and they feel as if they're on a little bit more control because they know where their hots are and everything else. And just watching what Pittsburgh did, they did a good job of getting a lot of pressure on Brady and not having to send the kitchen sink, because that's when he's going to kill you. And they used bracket coverages. They had Welker bracketed a lot, and they did a good job on, you know, the tight end, Aaron Hernandez, and didn't let Gronkowski kill him with crazy big plays. So my guess is that the Giants are going to follow a similar type plan, and hope that they can win their one-on-one matchups up front with their front four and get at Brady's feet, move him off his spot, and, you know, force him to have that clock speed up in his head. Because if they don't get there and he sits there, then he just kills you like he did on that touchdown pass to Hernandez against the Cowboys.
Right. A couple more quick ones for you, Bob. First of all, who on the Giants team has turned out to be a relatively pleasant surprise that you weren't sure could contribute to the part where he has thus far?
Well, on the offensive side of the ball, Victor Cruz, who made the team as a rookie free agent last year out of UMass, he's a local kid from Jersey, got injured, played in three games last year, and then, you know, it was touch and go if he was going to make the team, and he had a big drop in week one. They brought in Brandon Stokely to maybe be the slot guy. He didn't work out. He got hurt, and Cruz has just made huge plays. I mean, he's got the league lead in third down reception yardage, and he's got three touchdowns on third downs, and he's made a lot of big plays. So they've gotten more out of him than they would have expected. And then the biggest thing is Jake Ballard, the tight end. The Giants let Kevin Boss leave. He got a lot of money to go play for the Raiders. They were concerned about the concussions that he had had. And Jake Ballard was a practice squad player at Ohio State, where they don't really throw the ball a whole heck of a lot. And he was supposed to be a blocking tight end this year. And lo and behold, in preseason, started making some catches. Coughlin reminded everybody, Jake Ballard's a blocking tight end. And then the next thing you know, in these games, I mean, he's running some nice routes. He's getting upfield. And he's got very soft hands. And nobody thought that, you know, a guy like Jake Ballard could fill the role like Kevin Boss had. But he's done a great job with it.
The other thing I wanted to ask is you know, very simply, where do you feel like this game could come down? What key area can the Giants take advantage of, in your estimation, in order to, you know, not only be competitive, but to get a win on the road?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to find a way to convert their third downs. They have not been very good at that, and they've gotten themselves, because of their lack of a running game, they have gotten themselves in a lot of third and longs. I believe 42% of the Giants' third down chances this year have been 9 or more yards, which means they're not winning on first down. They've got to get productive yards on first down, even if it means short passes that almost look like runs, and stay on schedule and convert their third downs at a high rate, because that's what Pittsburgh did, obviously, and that's what any team would want to do to keep Brady off the field. And then when they get in the red zone, they've got to score, which is something they've been very good at this year. But look, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at what the Patriots have in their secondary. It is not exactly, you know, the Asante Samuel, Ty Law group of guys that they had with Rodney Harrison in the secondary. This is a pretty thin group, and they're going to have to take advantage when the opportunities are there.
Yeah, we've kind of noticed. So
it's unbelievable. Yeah. I can't believe that. Like when camp started, like James Sanders and Merriweather and Lee Bodden, and all those guys were on the team, and now they're all gone.
Well, we've tried asking those questions, and we kind of get stonewalled on that one. So your guess is as good as ours about that.
Well, the coach's track record proves that he usually knows what he's doing. So,
well, we've actually asked that because we've got a lot of people complaining about that. I said, well, is it time then to question, you know, the wisdom behind the thought process here? And, you know, there are some people beginning to jump off the ship where that's concerned because they just don't feel like the evaluation is a proper evaluation. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We can all see it on the field on Sunday. So we're thinking the only thing that, you know, what must have happened here is that something must have really happened bad for a guy like Lee Bodden to not beat Phillip Adams off of a roster spot.
Yeah, I mean, there's more to that story than just ability. Right. There's got to be.
Absolutely. Agreed.
I mean, you know, because that guy is, I know he's coming off the injury and everything, but he still appears to be a better player. But, you know, if you're not buying in, Bill's not going to keep you. If you're not part of it, you don't want to be a part of it, you're out.
That's probably a large part of it.
Been proven time and again, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Bob, thanks so much for the time today. We sure appreciate it, and we'll see you here on Sunday.
Can't wait to get there.
Obviously. Thanks, man. You got it.
Bob
Papa.
Take care, Bob.
Bob Papa, who's the radio voice of the New York Giants and obviously very passionate about what he does. Great job there. Some good insight. Love the insight on Ballard, too, at tight end, because, you know, here's a non-factor as a player, which is why I asked the question, because I had a feeling that his name might pop up, because it seems to pop up in almost every interview that every interview transcript that I've read from Tom Coughlin. Somebody's asking about Jake Ballard. So I'm like, well, okay, then let's find out if that is the, you know, the prevailing feeling on the young man. And apparently it is. And obviously Cruz as well is a UMass product.
Yep.
You know, so there's some interesting players there that they've actually been able to kind of pull a Patriot on.
They've gotten the most out of their value guys.
Yes, they're two huge value guys right there in Cruz and Ballard that the Patriots have made their living off of that they're not really making their living off of right now.
Yeah.
Part of the deal, right? One of the other things that I think that, you know, really where this game concerns me is obviously the ability for the Giants to use a four-man rush and not have to rely on anybody else's help to get pressure on a guy like
Brady.
That's
scary.
Which means that it's going to put the utmost pressure on the Patriots' offensive line, which was subpar itself this last week against Pittsburgh, and keeping a wounded Steeler pass rush away from Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. What is it now, 11 sacks over the last three games now they've allowed? I think that's the number I read.
I don't know the exact number, but that...
I think that's it. A lot more hits.
Over the last how many games?
Three.
Well, they had three against Pittsburgh. How many did they have against Dallas?
Four. I think four each the previous two games.
Against Dallas
and the Jets.
Yeah, so then that's right.
So that would be 11 over 3 weeks. And if you're talking along the lines of, you know, trying to keep, you know, Brady upright or keep him in the pocket, which the Patriots know you have to do to, you know, give him a chance to, you know, pick a defense apart, that the matchup just doesn't seem to be in the Patriots' favor.
No.
And that's the scary part about this week. The Giants match up with their defense, and they obviously have the track record now of having game planned against a Tom Brady-led offense. Now, yes, the Giants offensively are struggling running the football, as Bob just pointed out. But, you know, Eli Manning is certainly capable enough against the secondary, as we just talked about, to be able to do what needs to be done to get a win. I don't think the matchups line up well at all. At all. I'm trying to talk myself into picking against the team, and the Patriots are an 8.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
A little generous, I think.
That's very generous.
But they get that home benefit of the doubt, I guess.
They're getting that and then some, I think. Which is a little bit of a surprise. All right, so let's get to some emails and some Facebook posts here because we want to get to some of those before we run out of your time here. And again, coming up in our 3 o'clock hour, we'll have Christopher Price from WEEI.com who's going to step in and join us as well because we want to get into a little bit more about the Patriots defense that he's written about over the course of the last couple of days. Let me start on Facebook here because Sven from Sweden has taken the time to send some thoughts here, and I want to make sure I get them in. Hi, Eric and John. We still in Bill we trust. He blew the 07 draft, but he said that that draft class had basically sucked.
So the 08 draft, you mean?
Yeah, I think it's the 08 draft. It would have been after the 07 team. So there weren't many good players that he could have drafted. It's kind of obvious that he can't evaluate wide receivers from college, but he got Moss and Welker from trade, so if he stops drafting wideouts and trade for them instead, he could still do a good job there. The 09 and 10 drafts seem pretty good, in my opinion. The only thing he seems to do wrong is letting players go after their rookie contract. After 06 and 07, it seemed pretty reasonable to keep Asante Samuel with a cap number around $8 million a year. Instead, he signed Bodden a couple of years later for a cap number of $6 million. Drafting McCourty and Dowling, and the secondary was good. Dowling looked good the short time he played this year. If Dowling could stay healthy, I'm sure he'll be the next Nnamdi Asamoah. I'm not sure that I'm willing to go that route, but, you know, again, on paper, yeah, McCourty looked good, but then he's regressed. It's a sophomore slump year for Devin McCourty. He's got half the year to pull himself out of it, but based on what we've seen, And then, of course, Razai, I don't know what we can say. I don't even think you can really give an accurate description of his abilities because he was on the field so little.
Yeah. I mean, even in training camp, he hardly played.
I mean, physically, it looks like a great pickup, you know, for the first pick of the second round with the size that he has in the corner. He could probably come over and play some safety if he had to, but he hasn't been healthy.
I don't even think he could do that because he's so thin.
Well, he'd have to put on some weight. But I think, you know, I think he has the build that you could perhaps grow into that kind of thing if it could help you in terms of roster flexibility, which we know this team is like to do. But, you know, right now they don't have any flexibility.
There are just some players who, for whatever reason, are snake bit when it comes to injuries throughout their careers. He's one of them, going all the way back to high school.
He might be.
It's unfortunate because you never really know what you're going to get out of the guy, what you could have gotten out of the guy if he were healthy.
I'm beginning to kind of wonder about that. Yeah, beginning to kind of wonder about it.
But we won't have to worry about it for the rest of this year because he's on IR now, and we won't be seeing him.
Yeah.
Got to go with what we got.
Joshua says, John, a little off topic, but Yardbarker.com reports that Moss may be back in the picture with the Julian Edelman issue. What do you think?
No.
And if Taylor Price doesn't work out, would it make the Moss rumor even stronger?
It's just people got to stop with the Moss crap. He's not coming back. Stop.
Even if...
He's stopped. Just stop.
Edelman, by the way, was out of practice today.
He was at practice, yes.
Right.
The only...
You want to update practice?
Sure.
I know you did at the tail end of PFW.
Sure. Two absentees, Fletcher, as usual, and Wes Welker. Not the wide receiver people were expecting to be absent from practice because didn't look like he sustained any sort of injury in Pittsburgh. We actually talked to him after the game, and he seemed perfectly fine.
Okay.
So it could be non-injury related. We'll know more at about an hour when the injury report comes out, but I'll be curious to see what that listing is because, again, didn't see anything out of the ordinary for him after Pittsburgh. They were in shorts and shells. It's a beautiful day out there. Good day to practice. They were in high spirits, I'd say. Trying to put this...
They were in high spirits last week, too, and look what happened.
No, they actually weren't in high spirits. They were more serious last week. They were focused, not having fun, it looked like. They were more really taking it seriously. Today they were in, you know, let's put this behind us, you know, going over the top to try to be like, you know, giving themselves a pep talk almost, it seemed. And the owner made us a rare appearance, a rare in-season practice appearance.
Wow, that is a little unusual.
Probably because
for a little pep talk himself.
Probably because there were an inordinate number of cameras and reporters there to try to get pictures of Julian Edelman at practice, and coming on the heels of Gronkowski's embarrassment. You know, the tough guy reporters are out there asking if there's a discipline issue on this team. I think that might have been one of the reasons why we saw Robert out there today.
By the way, just in case, we talked about this earlier in the hour, and we wanted you to have this in case you are wondering what happened today at Bill's news conference. There was someone from Channel 7, Jonathan
Hall
is his last name. They sent a news reporter to sort of grill Bill because, quite frankly, you know, the sports guy's got to come around a lot.
Yeah.
Have to deal with him a lot.
Right.
So because you need
a bulldog.
You need a bulldog to come in, someone who doesn't have to deal with the coach all the time in order to sometimes run interference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happened today. Kevin, do we have that from earlier today? Do we have the Jonathan Hall exchange with Bill? All right. So in case you don't want to wait until the news tonight, want to play this for you. There may or may not be anything to this, but just so you can get an idea.
The awkwardness of it.
Yeah, there's a little awkwardness to it, and we want you to understand what reporters go through every day when they have a chance to talk with a coach.
Coach, on Edelman, do you have any comment at all on his arrest, and what is his future with the team as a result of that?
No, I don't have any comment. I think his representatives made their comment. I don't have anything to add to it.
Considering that Gronkowski posed for a picture with a porn star, you've got another young player out late at a nightclub getting arrested, is there a discipline issue on this team?
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that.
Nothing at all.
That's correct.
Have you had any conversation with Julian?
Yeah, of course.
I don't have any comment on it. Those conversations are private between myself and the player, like all the other ones we have.
You must be disappointed in him.
Right now, I'm getting ready for the Giants. That's what our football team's here for, to get ready for the Giants. Big game on Sunday.
Will he be playing that game?
We'll play the best players that we can for the game, like we always do. Won't be any different this week than any other week.
So can you answer how you determine as a coach how players' actions off the field when they determine, you know, their actions on the field? You know, how do you decide that?
How do I decide what?
How do you decide when something that happens to a player off the field, you know, will lead to changes on the field?
I think you look at each situation. You look at each situation individually, make your decisions based on whatever all the information that you have is, whatever that is. And everyone's different, obviously.
Will there be internal sanctions on against either Gronkowski or Edelman on this?
we never publicly announce our internal team discipline. So we wouldn't change that policy.
Do you have a system of team discipline in general?
Of course.
All right, so there you go. That's what we're left to deal with. You don't get any answers.
Awkward.
You get stonewalled. I mean, you know, we did have somebody in there asking the questions, and they were proper questions.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing inappropriate about the questions
at all
because it's newsworthy.
That's right.
But because the Patriots do try to control as best as they can all of the information that leaves, and I understand that's how a lot of teams handle the way things go, and this team is certainly right up there amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams take their cue from what the Patriots have done in the past. There was nothing inappropriate about it at all. He just chooses not to expand.
To be forthcoming. Right.
And to be forthcoming. Mm-hmm. The questions have to be asked. I think the thing that makes it most awkward is that you know the questions are coming,
mm-hmm.
but you almost get the answer.
You know the
like,
answers are coming, too.
Yeah, and it's almost like, well, how dare you ask the question? Well, no, how dare you not expect that the question's going to come? Because,
exactly.
Of course, it has to come.
Right, it's part that comes with the territory.
That's right. And it's almost like, well, you shouldn't be asking that question because you know I won't answer.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. You have to go on record.
Yeah.
You have to be on record.
So if you want to do that, that's fine. But, you know, don't treat the reporter like, well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, as you saw in A Football Life, he treats the owner the same way.
Yeah.
He doesn't discriminate against
the
questioner.
No, that's a great point, Eric. He actually does. I mean, we saw those little chats between him and Mr. Kraft in his office.
Or more awkward than the one we just heard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, either there's such an incredible level of comfort between the two that he doesn't mind talking like that, or B, he's just a disrespectful person.
I'm going with B. Because it's his initial. So I'm going with B.
Wow. Okay. By the way, you didn't see that pink slip in your office box, did you?
We don't have office boxes.
Wow. Bill in San Diego says, and Bill, I don't trust. Too many bad drafts, too many personnel cuts. I'm disappointed. Thanks. Okay, one more?
Sure.
Chad. Enough. I can't stand those alienated TV punks who keep complaining. 10 years ago, the Patriots were 4-12. Man, I hear about passion. That's not passion. That's frenzied harassment. Passion is about guys like me who stay up at 2 a.m. to watch the Patriots, not a load of goobers who, because they watch TV all day, are convinced they're super high-class analysts. That includes the PFW punks, who are absolutely pathetic, arrogant, negative, and party poopers. I hear Andy Hart saying, oh, the 2000 Patriots had a way better defense. We were 4-12 in 2000. Bill said it himself. He's rebuilding. So big deal. He's rebuilding.
Shut up, bitch.
It's not like Rob Ryan and Rex Ryan, who guaranteed they have the best defense ever in a Super Bowl. Can't those people understand we're rebuilding this defense? It's only the secondary. Up front, we got all pro caliber players, but of course, teams won't ground and pound against us. They only play with one back in the backfield and four wideouts. So yeah, there's a lot of passing. Then we can't tackle. Well, if we do, then I promise you we can get the offense off the field. But how come our wonderful defense in 2008 couldn't get the job done? Why did Samuel drop the interception? How did our guys give up nearly 30 points to the Panthers in 2004? You think the Jets D is better? Really? Matt Chorizo, Sione Pua, Ropati, whatever his name is, you call that a defense? Some people need to read Karl Marx. That's an outstanding email, Chad,
wow.
By the way.
A lot of venom in there.
Yeah. No, but you know what, though? But we're getting both sides here.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to read these two emails, because we got, I've had enough of Bill. I don't trust. Mm-hmm. And then we get this, who clearly looks for a bigger picture and apparently is seeing a bigger picture. So that's where we're left. We have two extremes here, really, I think, amongst Patriots Nation.
Which you wouldn't have had five.
No,
years
we were
ago.
All on the same page. We're all.
That would have been
everybody was on the same
to
page.
Express
yes,
that view that the other writer,
exactly,
the other emailer, wrote
exactly
in.
The point. So clearly, there's something amiss here in Patriot Land if we have two separate opinions like this.
Mm-hmm.
Left for another day to perhaps toss about, right?
Oh, there'll be plenty of them coming up.
Yeah, maybe soon, maybe starting next week. You never know. All right? All right, I don't know. Eric's got to go off and write, and we're going to take a break. And then coming up in just a little bit, we'll have Chris Price from WEEI.com going to take a closer look at the Pats defense and what might be able to be done, if anything, this year to shore things up in the playbook.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you. From Boston sports to concert and theater, whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots Checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots Checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Or you can hit the Facebook page as well. John Rook, R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. Submit the request. We'll answer that, and then you can post. You can use the chat function. You can message me, whatever you like. But we have the Facebook page up and working during the show, and we exchange a lot of good values and a lot of good thoughts on the Patriots in particular, even during off-show hours. So it's a pretty cool thing, and I'm very appreciative of all the friends that I've got on the Facebook page, especially football friends. It's awesome to have. So thank you very much for doing that. Oh, yeah, and Twitter, at jrook0722. J-R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name, 0722, and give you a Patriots tweet or two during the course of the day. Don't clutter up your inbox because I don't want mine cluttered up, but feel free to follow. Love to have you aboard. All right, a couple of emails from earlier that I wanted to share. This came from Chuck in New York, who says, a lack of talent turns bump and run into whiff and chase. How many snaps did Lee Bodden get during the bye before he's cut just before the Pittsburgh game? Do we flip Ryan Mallett for draft choices next year? Or do we keep him for 4 years, by which time Giselle convinces Tom that he should avoid knee replacement surgery and hang him up? Sort of Zen questions, I think, Charles. But, I hope they don't flip Ryan Mallett. I can't imagine that they drafted Ryan Mallett with the thought that they were going to flip him for more. But then again, that could have also been part of the plan because you know how quarterbacks are at such a premium around the league. The Patriots have a commodity. Young gun with an arm that somebody is bound to want at some point in time, depending upon how much you develop him. Now, the problem that I have is that after you've invested 2 or 3 years in a guy, why would you want to give him up for anybody? It's kind of like people telling me now, well, you got Brian Hoyer. And you develop Brian Hoyer to where now he's one of the most talked about subs around the league. Well, okay, that's great. But why would you want Brian Hoyer to leave to be a sub somewhere else when you got him as a sub right now? And the answer is you don't. Unless somebody's going to offer you something stupid, you know, like a really high draft pick. No, you don't do that. And I think the same thing with Ryan Mallett. You're going to spend, it was kind of like letting the two undrafted free agent tight ends go after training camp. You had them with you for 2 months, and then all of a sudden you cut them because you don't have a spot to put them. I mean, you could have put one, you know how they do things on the stupid injury list. You could have put one on the PUP or something rather than try to sneak him through in the practice squad. You probably could have gotten away with some of it. But no, you decide to cut him outright, and then you lose him to divisional opponents. Now, it's not something that has come back to haunt them by any stretch. And I don't think either one has really contributed significantly to their other team. But the point is, it's in principle. You put two guys in, you teach them everything you know, you try to coach them up, and all of a sudden you cut them for somebody else that you know and that you loathe and that you despise and that you got to play twice a year. They go to them? That's just dumb. That's just dumb. Why do you invest the time and the effort into it? I don't get that. Thomas in Nova Scotia. I think it's funny and ironic that the Pats have written the book on how to pick apart soft zone coverage over this decade, and despite exposing the weaknesses to that sort of defensive system as much as any team can, it's the number one style they choose to employ. I suppose what really made it work back in the day, though, was that they had high discipline, high awareness, veteran players capable of seeing things develop and reacting before the trigger is pulled. Defensive players on the Pats now are reacting a second after the trigger is pulled, not before. They're not high intelligence players that diagnose things quickly enough to make Bill's style really work. Same thing applies to the rushers to a degree in being able to anticipate the snap and moves people are going to use against them. The old rushers were good, but they were not unbelievable physical specimens. It's about translating thought to action quickly. The Pats D today doesn't have it. And, yes, I think this is actually hitting on part of the problem, Thomas. Thank you. Because there are new players in the system, and there are also young players in the system. You got veteran players who are being relied upon, but they're still new to the way things are done. And then you got young players who are obviously new to the way things are done. And this is where I would argue, as much as any other team in the league, the lack of OTAs and preseason work and learning the playbook and getting in step, lockstep with everybody else on this team, this is where it's hurt the Patriots as much as anybody in the entire NFL. Because there is a system of intricacy here that maybe you and I don't quite get, but now is becoming painfully obvious on the field. It's not working. And we're sitting here zinging them for it. Those guys may be out there busting their you-know-whats for it. It's not working. And you don't have the veteran savvy to be able to overcome the learning curve that is clearly occurring here with this team, especially on the defensive side. It's part of the problem. It's just adding to the problems that we see with personnel right now. Sergeant Conroy, U.S. Army Military Police. Guys, do you think that Razai was put on IR to make room for Falk? I feel like he did, and that scares me because that was definitely not in the best interest in the team. I don't think there's any doubt that they had to make room, Sergeant, for Kevin Fault before last week. Seeing that Rasai was not going to be ready to play, and then feeling upon further reflection that he might not be ready at any point in time this year, they just went ahead and decided to make that move. Now, they would not have put him on IR if they thought he could come back and play at some point in time this season. But they clearly felt like that was not going to be the case. So it's kind of like, well, we have to clear a roster spot for Falk anyway. Dowling's on IR. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but there probably was a little bit of a thought process to go into it. Guy that puts a lot of thought process into why things happen the way they do is Chris Price from WEEI.com. Covers the Patriots on a day-in and day-out basis, and I'm happy to call him a friend because he's a pretty knowledgeable football guy. Chris, thanks for taking some time today.
Thanks, John. Hey, I appreciate that. It's a pleasure being on with you.
You know, let's kind of – you wrote something, I think it was yesterday that I saw this morning. And I'm not entirely – I'm not sure. It might have been early this morning, but I saw the post talking about the defense. And we spent a lot of time on the show talking about defense yesterday, and obviously it's trickled into today. And while I don't think we want to put the entire blame for Sunday's debacle on the defense, certainly, you know, what you had to say struck some chords. So I wanted your perspective – on where this team is after 8 weeks in the season now defensively and whether or not you see any possibility for wholesale changes, because clearly wholesale changes have to happen. Otherwise, this team is in danger of not making playoffs.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, I mean, when you talk about wholesale changes, it's not like they're going to be able to, you know, obviously make trades, make deals, you know, ship guys, any real impact guys anyway, right. You know, in and out of here. So what you have to do is kind of work within the scheme and work with the personnel that you have. And I talked to a handful of guys around the league who mentioned some suggestions and said, look, you know, this thing is really, with the phrase that one guy used was, look, this is salvageable. I mean, you know, you can do things to get this turned around. It's not going to be easy. And you're going to have to make some hard decisions, but you can get this thing turned around. One of the things that people said to me was, look, you know, if they get Albert Haynesworth healthy and motivated, this is a completely different defense. When Haynesworth is on the field, when he's healthy, he's motivated, he's playing well, the Patriots have an ability to rush four. And that means you don't need to blitz. That means you have more guys who could drop back into coverage. That means you could play more zone coverage. And, you know, subsequently, the theory goes, you know, you'd be able to confuse more quarterbacks and be able to get more interceptions. Mm-hmm. So Haynesworth, really, if he's on the field, it's kind of a domino effect. You know, you get him out there, you get him occupying two and three blockers at one time, you'll be able to free things up. You know, you'll be able to do more things. One of the other things that people said to me was, look, you know, you got to improve the communication. You know, this is a defense that, at least against the Steelers, really struggled. A lot of times, at least, you know, on film, there were guys who shouldn't be where they needed to be at particular times, and it really cost them. There was a couple of touchdown passes that Roethlisberger threw that the secondary didn't know, you know, if they were coming or going. So you have to get everyone on the same page. You have to improve communication, and I have to believe that communication will be improved when Jerod Mayo takes the green dot helmet back, you know, the defensive communication system. I think that was part and parcel of it. He only played 31 snaps, I think, was against the Steelers, the fewest he's ever done in a non-injury situation over the course of his career. You get him back there, you get him making the defensive calls, I think things will kind of start to fall into place. And the other thing was, we talked a little bit about it, was more zone coverage. Mm-hmm. The Patriots have been at their best this year when they played zone coverage, when they played consistent, steady zone coverage as opposed to what we saw against the Steelers. And they've been able to force turnovers, and they've been able to confuse quarterbacks into making some bad throws. We've seen that over the course of the year. And one of the things that one guy said was, you know, the Patriots play zone coverage. They don't have the personnel to match up man-to-man. They play zone coverage. They'll be able to scheme things up, and they'll be able to confuse some more quarterbacks, and that should lead to some more turnovers. So those three things really were the things that stood out for me when it comes to kind of turning this thing around at such a key point in the season.
All right, so we got more Haynesworth, more zone, and more communication, or at least better communication while on the field. Now, certainly that all sounds good, but the big question here is, which of those, if any, are actually achievable and attainable? Because, quite frankly, you know, Haynesworth was talking about in the locker room, well, you know, I'm still trying to knock some rust off. Well, hell, we've had 8 weeks here. Let's get going.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of fans feel that way. I think that's a great point, John. I mean, this is a guy who's been here for, you know, for 8 weeks. And I know Belichick has talked about the fact that he's kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. You know, he probably wasn't where he needed to be when it comes to conditioning and that kind of thing. I think you're going to see him step to the fore more as the season goes on. I also think it's important to remember that I honestly believe that they didn't get him for September and October when teams throw the ball. Look, you know, he's been a very good pass rusher. But I think, you know, his presence will really be felt if he stays healthy and if he stays on the field. His presence will really be felt in November and December when the bad weather comes and teams have to run the ball and he's able to occupy two and three blockers at one time. So it is. It's a gradual process with Ainsworth, and quite frankly, he isn't where he should be physically, maybe mentally, maybe, you know, motivational-wise at this time of year. But he's a guy that they need for the long term. They need him healthy. They need him motivated. And they, especially when the, you know, when the cold weather comes and teams have to run the ball as opposed to throwing it all over the lot.
You know, Chris, I we've been banging on the defense a lot, but I will give them some credit, in particular, Andre Carter credit, because now he's had a couple of straight weeks, with two sacks. So it's clear that he's beginning to have some effect, against opposing offensive lines. Why do you think, and more specifically, what do you see happening that's allowing Carter to get free?
Well, I think a lot of times when you look at his sacks, it's no coincidence, and we talked about Ainsworth being in there, it's no coincidence that Ainsworth is alongside him. Carter's second sack against Dallas, Ainsworth occupied three blockers on the left side of the line, which allowed Carter to be in single coverage, and he just beat his man around the corner and got into the sack. One of the things about Carter that really stands out for me is I think they knew he was a pass rusher, but he was a bit of an unknown commodity when it came to playing against the run. I think a lot of people viewed him, and rightly so, as a situational guy when he first came here because he really hadn't played all the run all that well. Well, this year he's played the run very well, and I think we've seen his snaps go up as a result. This is a guy who played probably, just about half the snaps in the season opener against Miami, and against Dallas he played more than 90% of the snaps. So he's getting more reps, he's getting more time out there, and that's why I think it's starting to pay off, especially when it comes to sack, when it comes to quarterback hits, that kind of thing. When it comes to getting steady, consistent pressure on the quarterback, Andre Carter is probably the best of the lot right now.
All right, then let's turn the attention to the secondary, because that needs a lot of work, I think, as we all agree. What's your opinion on why Lee Bodden was let go 2 days before this team gets ready to play Pittsburgh? Any thoughts one way or the other?
I think it reached an untenable situation between the two sides, and let me be clear about this. Lee Bodden is not the kind, you know him too, John. Lee Bodden is not the kind of guy who's going to come into the locker room and, you know, flip a table over and start poisoning the place and then, you know, be a real bad influence.
Right.
I think what he did was smart. I think, yeah, I think from what I understand, he went to the front office, went to Belichick and said, look, you know, this situation is not good for me right now. I want to be able to move on. I'm not playing as much as I thought I would play. I'm not playing where I thought I would be playing. And so, you know, I'm not in a good place right now. And so what the Patriots did, they looked at his, you know, quite frankly, his body of work over the course of the season. And you're looking at a guy who really struggled to maintain or struggled to get back to that level of play he showed in 2009. I don't think he was ever the same guy after he injured his shoulder at the start of the 2010 season and ended up sitting out the entire year on IR. Not just physically, but, you know, he was not able to regain that form. He slipped a little bit, was still playing fairly well in the slot, but again, that's not where he wanted to be. That's not where he wanted to play. And so I think it reached a point between the two sides that said, look, you know, it's better off for both of us if we just kind of cut ties right now and move on. The timing of the situation for me was very curious, you know, 2 days before the Steelers game, which I thought was very bizarre. If you're going to cut ties with Lee Bodden, you know, you do it at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You don't end up owing him as much money as you end up owing him. So, but I think when you look at the situation, you look at both sides, I think both sides had to move on. My only question was they did it when they did. I think you could have said, well, you know, I think Bodden maybe could have, I don't want to say sucked it up, but kind of said, okay, you know what, let's try and make this work over the course of the rest of the year. We'll cut you loose at the end of the season. You know, you'd be free to go on at that point.
Yeah, I kind of sense that might have been the case. And you know what, shame on Lee for not being able to accept a role. But you know, I can understand a certain amount of frustration because he wasn't able to perform at the level that he was previously accustomed. And then he didn't want to settle for a secondary role, as you've already suggested he was going to have to do within that secondary. But, and I'm sure there are a lot of Patriots fans that had they really known what was going on here that would say, well, you know what, Lee, if you can't deal with that, then fine, see you, go pound sand.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I want to make this perfectly clear. He's not a guy who's going to poison the locker room.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a situation where he's going to come in and be a bad influence on the younger players. You know, he's not going to be that kind of guy. But it just reached a point for both sides where they couldn't go on anymore. And, you know, this happened in the NFL, and he said, you know, and both sides came to the agreement, and they decided to move on. But again, you know, the timing for me was just the strangest part of the whole thing. I think they could have made it work over the next 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games.
Right.
You know, they could have put something together, and they could have said, all right, look, work with us here, and then we'll move on at the end of the year. You know,
right.
And we'll give you a handshake, and, you know, we'll cut ties at the end of the year.
That's what they should have done. Absolutely. 2 days before a game that could mean everything in terms of the playoffs on down the line. I mean, the timing is just incredibly bad. And like you said, you're going to owe him the money anyway. So
yeah,
make him play out the year. And then you're right. You know, if you want to be fair to the guy, as long as he can be the quote unquote good guy in the locker room and not poison things, then, you know, finish out the year. That's why I'm led to believe, based on your scenario, and I have every reason to think that there is some truth to what was happening here, that the Patriots thought that this was an untenable situation going forward if they didn't cut ties now.
Yeah, it's a great point. For me, the timing was bizarre. But, you know, and again, you know, you're looking at a guy who was really a slot corner. You know, he was not.
Right.
We can talk on and on about how Devin McCourty has struggled over the course of the year, but, you know, he's still playing it. I'm not saying at an elite level, but a good level as that outside guy. And Kyle Arrington kind of supplanted Botts as that other guy. You know, but there's no reason to think that you couldn't at least have some more depth, some added depth at the position, guard against the possibility of injury down the road. You know, if you're a Patriots fan at this point, you're not altogether happy with, you know, the position in general. But, you know, if you lose Arrington, or if you lose McCourty for a stretch now, you know, you're going to have to rely very, very heavily on Antoine Molden and Phillip Adams. And, you know, Molden was yanked in the third quarter of the game against the Steelers. So, I mean, you know, that's where you are right now with that situation. Again, I don't think they have the personnel anymore to play a lot of man coverage. I think you're going to see more zone coverage. I think they're going to try and all get on that same page when it comes to doing something like that, because they just don't have the depth right now with the position to roll a whole lot of quality defensive backs out there.
There's no question about that we've got to see more zone, because they're going to be forced to play more zone, which isn't necessarily a good thing. It's going to make them more predictable on defense to opposing offenses. I mean, you know, frankly, Ben Roethlisberger picked them apart last week in man. So
yeah. Yep.
What's it going to be like against the zone if you're not getting pressure up front, especially?
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's down to it. I mean, the Patriots more than anyone preach team defense, and you're not, you know, if you play zone, you're going to have to get more of a pass rush up front. Now, again, that goes back to the idea of Haynesworth. If you could get a quality pass rush with four guys, you can drop more back into coverage, and you can do more to disguise things for opposing quarterbacks. So I do. I think it's a domino effect, and I think it all starts with getting Haynesworth out there on the field as healthy as possible.
Wow. All right. And then as far as the communication issue, I mean, it clearly seemed like Patriots were able to pick up the slack somewhat when Mayo was out defensively because of his injury and putting Gary Guyton back there. Now, whether it was Spikes primarily that did the play calling?
It was Spikes against Pittsburgh. He had the green dot in the helmet.
Okay. Who had the green dot prior to that against the Cowboys or the Jets? Do you know?
That was Gary Guyton.
All right. Was Guyton. So why did things change?
That's a great question. And we haven't asked that, and quite frankly, we should have asked that. That's a very good question. I think Spikes, I will say this, Spikes started very slowly. I know he had the injury at the early part of the season, and Belichick has talked about how, you know, the first few games of the regular season were essentially his preseason, and he had really started to come on. I was really impressed with the level of his play. I mean, he'd supplanted guys like Dane Fletcher at that spot. You know, he'd taken away many of the reps that Fletcher had over the last year or so and had started to play better. I think he had 8 tackles against Dallas, including a couple for loss. Blew up that shovel pass right on the goal line that the Cowboys tried to run.
Yeah.
He played very well over the last couple of weeks, but I think Sunday represented a big step back for him in his overall development. So, yeah, it is. That's a fantastic question that they decided to move from Guyton to Spikes for the green dot. It's one of those things where you can only have two guys. I think you can only have one or two guys with the dot. I think it might be a logistical thing. But it was Spikes who had the green dot in the helmet for the game against the Steelers. And again, I think that some of those problems when it comes to communication would be solved with a healthy Jerod Mayo out there on the field. You know, when it comes to communication, when it comes to getting everyone on the same page, when it all comes to, you know, people working together, I think he's the guy you want there. I think he's the guy you want making the calls. I think he's the guy you want with a green dot on your helmet going forward.
Yeah. Can we also put out an APB for Jermaine Cunningham?
Yeah. I tell you, it's a bad sign if you're a healthy scratch.
Wow.
You know, you're the guy who, you know, much like Spikes, you know, had the injury problem at the start of the year. Kind of been struggling to catch up a little bit. Look, this is a guy who, and I did this piece earlier this year, get some quotes from Urban Meyer about cutting him, and he believed that cutting him was the guy who was going to be able to, you know, step in and be the pass rusher that so many Patriots fans had wanted over the course, you know, the last couple of years. But to this point, he hasn't done it. And I will say this, that they brought in guys who kind of moved ahead of him on the depth chart. You know, guys like Mark Anderson, kind of situational guys who are pass rushers. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be able to fit, at least at the start of the year, Andre Carter into that mix as well. So he's kind of bumped down the depth chart a little bit, but he has done really nothing over the course of this season to move himself up the depth chart to this point.
Overall, Chris, and again, great knowledge today. Thank you for the insight here. If this defense is fixable, does it need to be fixed considerably for this team to find its way into the playoffs, considering that we've got pretty good parity, I think, in the league this year? I think you could see any one of maybe a dozen teams really consider themselves potential Super Bowl contenders. In other words, could the Patriots just do this on offense alone? Could they get to the big game?
Well, we've seen it before. I mean, we've seen not teams with defenses this statistically, you know, ranked. I mean, you know, not a team defense that's 32nd overall, but if you get a quality offense out there, you know, the year that the Colts won the Super Bowl, you know, their defense was in the 20s overall. You know, the Saints back in 2009, their defense was in the 20s as well. As long as you have Tom Brady operating on all cylinders, and that's, you know, it's a lot to put on the shoulders, not only to take care of the offense, but the defense as well, because quite frankly, those teams, you know, the best defense was a good offense, and we've seen that before. But, you know, this thing is like I said, it's salvageable, it's fixable. There are things that they could do, again, starting with the idea of getting a healthy Ainsworth on the field, that could help out. And frankly, we were talking about this today in the media workroom, that there's no team in the AFC that's far and away better than the rest of the pack. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look at the NFC and you can pick out the Packers and say, that's a team that is head and shoulders above the rest. That's a team right now that has to be considered the conference favorite to go to the Super Bowl. Across the board in the AFC, there's no team like that. Every team has flaws, and I think the Patriots are one of those teams. You know, they have to be on that short list to come out of the AFC, even with this defense being, you know, as situationally bad as it is, this defense can still be good enough to get them where they need to be down the road. But again, it's not where it needs to be at this point, but there are things that can be done to kind of start to turn this thing around, start it heading in the right direction.
Well, that leads me to my final point, Chris, with you, because, you know, we saw last week where, you know, Pittsburgh's defense took this offense out of the game. And, you know, obviously the Patriots defense had a lot to do with that. They couldn't get the Pittsburgh offense off of the field and couldn't allow the Patriots offense to get any rhythm, when they had the ball. But those 2-3 and outs to start the first half and the second half, I mean, the offense has to be held at least somewhat accountable for that. And if you're going to perform like that and you're going to be somewhat predictable when you are out there against a team that, you know, didn't have a couple of key members of its own defense, I'm talking about the Steelers now, this begs a larger question as to whether or not opposing teams are beginning to catch up with what the Patriots are doing.
That's a great point. And the Steelers were able to, and you know, look, the Steelers are a very good defensive team, and they made some adjustments. I give them a lot of credit. I give them all the credit in the world, because the Steelers defense for such a long time really existed in a vacuum. I mean, they did what they did. You know, they did the zone blitz and ran the 3-4, and they really didn't kind of, you know, pay attention to what the rest of the league did. Well, they saw what the Jets did in the playoffs last year. You know, they thought about the idea of more man coverage. They thought about the idea of bringing four and dropping everyone else back, and they did it. They were able to pick apart the Patriots. Not everyone has that kind of personnel. But when you get to the postseason, that's when you kind of run up against these sorts of teams, because, you know, there are no easy outs in the postseason. The Patriots are still, I feel fully confident in saying, the Patriots are going to make the postseason. You're looking at a team that is still at the very worst, and I'm saying the very worst, an 11-5 team. But there are still problems on the defensive side of the ball, and that translates. I mean, it's complementary football, and they've talked about it a handful of times this year about how you need to play good complementary football. They did not do that on Sunday against the Steelers. The offense didn't help out the defense. The defense didn't help out the offense. And we saw how it turns out.
All right, very good. Chris, thanks for the time, buddy. You're great at what you do. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Johnny. I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you around the field. You got it. That's Chris Price, again, WEEI.com, covering the Patriots. Does a superb job. You know, I guess between what Chris does for EEI and what Mike Reese does for ESPN Boston. I mean, those two guys really, and of course our own guys, notwithstanding the PFW guys who, you know, this is their job. It's what they do 24/7, 365. But those two guys also, as far as the mainstream media is concerned, they cover it, they take it seriously, they do a great job with it. You can't go wrong in getting some of that information. But we're glad you're here with us as well for a lot of that information, a lot of the discourse. And, you know, now we're going to turn it back over to you. The Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398. What are your thoughts? In Bill, do you still trust? That's been a sort of a central theme to today's conversation. 508-298-0398. Email webradio@patriots.com or hit me up on Facebook. Let's take another final time out here, and then we'll come back and get to your thoughts in the playbook.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Braves! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Hey guys, pumpkin coffee is back at Dunkin' Donuts.
Awesome. But what's with the guy behind you playing the timpani drum?
It's a big deal. Dunkin's pumpkin coffee is back for fall.
So you hired him to play every time you say pumpkin coffee?
And when I say something smart in a meeting.
This is big. Pumpkin is back at Dunkin' Donuts. Hurry in for a hot or iced pumpkin coffee before it's gone. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Guys, I think the lady at Dunkin' Donuts is totally into me.
Why is that?
She made a delicious chicken salad sandwich just for me with celery and herbs on an oven-toasted croissant.
Yeah, they definitely do that for everyone.
Can I just enjoy this moment with Dunkin' Chicken Salad Woman in my heart?
Hurry in for Dunkin's new Bakery Fresh Chicken and Tuna Salad Sandwiches. They're hand-built just for you. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
All right, guys, ready for 2 weeks in the wild or what?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, then strap on those backpacks.
Hey, let me just check this text.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, no.
What?
Not now.
What is it?
McRib is back.
What?
We're going to miss it.
This backpack just got really heavy, guys.
Everybody back in the car. We are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, good.
McRib is back for just $2.79. But that saucy pork goodness is here for a limited time.
What do you think? You guys want to do a golf trip instead, maybe?
That's kind of nature,
isn't it? No.
The simple joy of big news. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Web radio at patriots.com is how you reach us via email as well. And let's get back to the playbook. Jeff is in Bristol, Connecticut. Jeff, you got power?
Yeah, no, I don't have power.
Oh, goodness gracious. Sorry to hear that, brother.
It is brutal, man. Brutal.
Well, I hope it changes for you real soon.
Thank you. Belichick.
Yep.
I am still, of course, a Belichick believer.
Okay.
And I would put him on my money if I could. The reason is if you go back and you're looking at, our last three Super Bowls here, if you're looking at kind of like 2001 and you're selecting kind of, from a coaching perspective, if we're looking at the players and what he did, if you're going back to 01, I think, you got a lot of guys there that he kind of inherited. You got Lawyer Malloy, you got Kevin Falk, of course, you can't forget about Adam Vinatieri, you got Seymour, McGinnis, Ty Law, Teddy. But some of those guys have been around since, mid 90s. And no one was doing anything with him. Parcells didn't do anything. Canada didn't do anything with him. And of course, he brought on Tom Brady and Richard Seymour that year. So a lot of those guys, were kind of legacy guys, but he brought them on. And I think, his ability to coach is really what, obviously coupled with the fact that they had some experience now being around the league for a bit, but he had the ability to bring those guys up to Super Bowl status. And if you continue on and you look into 2003 and 2004, he makes some really vital moves. Obviously those guys are still around for the most part, but, in 2003, thanks to him, obviously in some of the office, of course, but you get Deion Branch that comes on board, Rodney Harrison, and then it only grows in 2004. Corey right. Dillon comes on, Vince Wilfork, he picks up in the draft, Asante Samuel. Like, these are big moves. And every year, his impact as, a coach to select great talent and to continue to coach kind of the more veteran guys grows. And his impact is only bigger. So I think what we're seeing now is, I think he had a lot of great players when he came into the program that just weren't getting utilized well. His ability to coach these guys is what brings us up to Super Bowl status. And then he had some really good drafts and some great free agency picks, and we're going through a little bit of a tough period now, in that, those guys that he inherited aren't around anymore. And we haven't had some great draft picks. I think everyone's just freaking out right now. Are we at our best? Of course not, but it's because we've looked really, really good over the years, and that's not always going to be the case. And, here we are. We lose to Pittsburgh, reigning AFC champions, a great team all around, and everyone's freaking out. So, what I say to everyone is take a deep breath. Relax, okay? We're 5-2, and we're a 5-2 Patriots that is kind of an uglier Patriots that we're even used to seeing. So, And we're coming off a bye week. I personally think, watching Patriots over the years, I think they play better in a rhythm. You know, typically coming out of bye weeks, we're used to playing, you know, Miami or the Bills over the years. We've only really had two tough matchups coming out of a bye week. I think the last one I can remember was Baltimore. And even then, you know, I think we just squeaked by in overtime, winning by three. So I don't think we really play all that well coming out of byes, even though statistically I'm sure we probably have won more given that we play Buffalo usually. But, you know, I think when you just put all those things together, we're weaker than usual. We played a great, great team coming out of a bye week. Yes, they were banged up, but, you know, they were in the rhythm. They didn't have any time off. That, you know, you just got to kind of sit back, look at those things, and go, okay, let's wait to see a few more games here before we all start freaking out. If we lose this weekend,
yeah,
you know, then start to get really, really nervous and start to panic a little bit more.
But well, that's why I don't still, like the matchups this weekend. I'm already really nervous.
Exactly. But even then, no way in hell am I going to turn my back on Belichick. He is a phenomenal coach. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, any of the documentaries that, you know, have been made about him recently, I remember there was a great one.
Jeff, let me ask you something, though. All right. What, in your opinion, though, makes a Hall of Fame coach? What makes a Hall of Fame coach?
I think, obviously, your record, right? Your ability
right.
to win.
Yeah.
Your ability to win championships.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what you do with the team that you have, right? Like,
bingo.
People like,
okay, yeah. I'm liking that right there. All right, so what you do with the team you have. This team does not have some of the personnel that other teams have had. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I would.
Okay. So now you're right when you say this team is 5-2. They're really not far behind what might be considered the elite in the league right now, but you'd have to admit that the trend is a little bit alarming. Right?
Definitely.
Okay. So doesn't it stand to reason that because he's a Hall of Fame coach, in the past he's been able to do one of two things. He's either been able to A, have superior talent at the positions, or B, adjust to the point where you can sort of mask the inadequacies that you have in your lineup. Would that also be fair to say?
Yes, relatively, yeah.
All right. Now, what's going on in the field right now is not working. So you got to figure out, if you don't have the talent, you're going to have to mask what you do have. And I think that is at the core of the problem with the 2011 Patriots.
Totally agree. And that's what I'm waiting to see, you know. That's just why, like, I'm not saying he's out of the clear. He's definitely, you know, if I were looking and if I had a chance to talk to Bill right now, you know, and I was being totally honest, I'd be like, hey, dude, you know, I'm nervous and what's going on.
Yeah, what are we going to do here, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I still think, obviously, there's some grace period here. Like these guys that he had kind of inherited, you know, had a few years under their belt. I think he's in a very unique position, you know, being at the helm of a team here, in that a lot of these, you know, guys that he's going to have to coach up are a lot younger and less veteran than what he's used to.
Okay.
And, you know, even Belichick, you know, as great as he is going to have to adapt to that and find a way to make it work. And it's not going to happen overnight. And New England fans were spoiled, you know, and they're looking for him to, you know, just kind of wave his magic wand and it's not going to happen. And just give the guy some time. He's going to have to work with these guys. They're young and they're not as talented as in general. As guys in the past have been. So, you know, you get those two things coupled, and you just got to kind of sit back, you know, hold on to your seat and be like, man, you know, I hope he can do what he's done in the past.
Okay.
Although what he's done in the past isn't exactly similar to this. So,
yeah.
You know, that's, I'm going to remain positive. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because, you know, I think his football IQ is through the roof. He's just going to have to make it work. And, and so anyone out there who's already... He was already throwing in the towel on Belichick, and you know what I mean?
Hold on, right?
Okay. Yeah, hold on, and, you know, because you may be putting your foot in your mouth a few weeks down the road.
All right, that's a fair assessment. That's a fair assessment, and obviously a passionate one well, Jeff. And thank you for the call, and good luck with bringing the power back in Bristol, Connecticut. Let's go to Kevin in Louisiana. Kevin, you're in the playbook.
Oh, yeah. How you doing today?
Great, Kevin. What's on your mind?
I think it's more of the scheme and switching to the 4-3 defense. I think we weren't great at defense last year, but our defense wasn't that bad to what it is this year. I don't think we had the personnel for the 4-3. We may have brought in Albert Haynesworth and Andre Carter, but I mean, I think in that point in their career, they're on the downside of their career, and I think they're more situational, as well as the Anderson guy. I think he's more of a situation as well. I think we should have kept some core guys, but made some better impact in the draft, like moved up and got a Robert Quinn, someone like that who can get after, and he can develop him more into a 3-4 scheme. I think McCunningham, he had an okay season last year as a rookie, but I guess injuries have hampered him. But I think a year within the belt and he was more healthy starting the season, I think he would have had an impact. I think there's more high expectations on him this year as well, and I think he don't have panned out too well.
Okay. Well, I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of argument from too many people. What would you like to see, though, Kevin, that this team isn't doing right now?
I wouldn't mind seeing a lot more man. I don't like seeing all those exotic blitzes they're sending, like a couple plays.
But you know now they're getting beat, man, okay? That's really where they're getting toasted.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I think you should miss it. If you're going to I think you should send like some more, a little bit more zone blitzes, but not those blitzes, like not bad blitzes on third downs, like that, like one third down, it was what, third and eight. He sent a blitz. The blitzes wasn't working all game long. I didn't like that play calling right there. I personally think he should just go out to a good defensive coordinator and just let him head coach instead of trying to run the defense. I think that's another area we're hurting at.
Yeah, I frankly would agree with that assessment. I think it's time perhaps to go out there and look for somebody to kind of run the defense and let Bill be the CEO. And thanks, Kevin, for the call. Let me see if I can squeeze in Pratt in Maryland here. Pratt, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, no problem, John. How you doing?
Great, man.
Yeah, always love your show, and you always give good perspective on, topics about the Patriots and first-time caller.
Well, we try. Thank you for taking the time today.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I was thinking about with the beaten-up secondary that we have, or the inexperienced secondary that we have, we obviously have McCourty, and I don't think we're going to give up on him anytime soon. So obviously he's going to be a guy that we're going to keep on one of the outside receiver spots. But I was thinking, I don't know if anybody's brought this guy's name up, but Benny Sapp. Mm. I know he's been available since the first game when we beat the Dolphins, and he got cut by the Dolphins, and not too many teams have shown much interest in him, but I think there's some potential in a guy like that who could come in and maybe boost up the secondary.
I hadn't really given that a whole lot of thought, and because quite frankly, I hadn't looked at a whole lot other than what the Patriots have already brought in street free agent wise to go, for workouts, and they did this basically in the first 2 weeks of the regular season. The general thought process is that if they're not signed by now, they're probably not going to help you. The only way that something like that probably occurs, at least in my own humble opinion, is if you, somehow lose further depth than you already have on this team and you don't have much. And so that would be, a desperation move more than anything else. Otherwise, why isn't he in here already?
That's a fair point. But let's just hope the Patriots turn it around, John.
Well,
at least the secondary.
It can't exist the way that it's existing now, and this team get into the postseason. It just can't. I realize that the possibility exists, but teams are going to continue to try to dial up. Again, point was made early in the program, Pratt, that you still have to have the personnel on your team to carry out the game plan to beat New England. All right, and I do understand that not every team left on the schedule has the personnel that you need to carry out the game plan. But the Steelers had it. I think the Giants have it. It's pretty clear that there are at least two or three other teams that are still on the schedule also have it. And if you don't come up with wins, then you're talking 5, 6, 7 losses, and now you're talking about being on the outside looking in. So it's clear that something has to change fundamentally with the way this team is defending opposing offense. And if that means going to more zone, if it means dialing in other blitzes like our gentleman from Louisiana just mentioned that he'd like to see, you've got to throw something in there. You got to mix in a curveball every once in a while with a two-seam fastball,
Exactly.
That's what this defense is not doing. They're predictable. And because they're predictable, opposing teams who have at least even, if not superior, man-on-man matchups, they're taking advantage of knowing what's coming. Ben Roethlisberger said it himself after the game, and we mentioned it in the opening hour of the program today. We took what the Patriots were giving us.
Right.
Well, you've got to mask what you're going to give the other team. You've got to cause them that extra second or split second to have some doubt, because that sometimes is all you need in order for A, your corner to cover, or B, your end to make a sack. We're talking about minute time frames here is all this team needs, and things could change for the better. So you got to change it up. If you're going straight man, pin your ears back, get after it, and you don't have the personnel to do that, you're going to get beat, and that's what happened this week.
Exactly. So let's hope for the best, John. Thank you.
Pratt, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Let me get a couple of other emails in here. I want to get this one in from Ray, who sent a very passionate email, and I'll try to read as much of it as I can, Ray. But he says, I listen to your show every day. Of all the programs I could listen to, like SiriusXM, PFW, etc., got to get that in there. Your show really helps me prepare for each weekend and set my expectations accordingly. So thank you for that, Ray. I know you spent a lot of time yesterday discussing the defense and how we're potentially reaching critical mass. I think we're starting to tap into Haynesworth's potential now that he's becoming consistent. Will Fork is continuing to show why he's such an asset to the team. It's now well known that the Achilles heel for this year is the secondary. Rather than repeating what has been said about how poor they're playing, I'd like to know what you think they could do in practice to be better. Put on Belichick's hat for a day. What would, could you do to improve the play in the secondary between weeks? Knowing, of course, that improvement here will take weeks. You know, it's a great question. The only thing I can tell you is that I would not, first of all, have made some of the personnel moves that I've made. The one that they made to eliminate Lee Bodden from the equation 2 days before the game, to me, is an inexplicable, inexcusable gaffe. Even if he came to you, as Chris Price suggested, and said, this isn't my role, I'm not comfortable here, I'd like to cut bait, let's just part and be friends, I'm challenging the guy right back. I'm saying, what do you mean? You can't do this in the midseason. You got a contract. We're paying you. Now, Lee Bodden has always indicated in the time he's been here that he's not an anti-team guy. He's not a guy that's going to want to spoil it for everybody. But are you that desperate to have control over the locker room to take a chance on a guy like Bodden that you're going to have to pay anyway? You ask him maybe, look, can you please play this role? Can you please accept the role that we have for you, which is as a slot corner right now, and then do the best you can, and then take me for my word. This is how I deal with people. At the end of the year, we'll reevaluate. You want to go, you can go. But we're not getting anything out of the guy now, and you're still paying, and yet you let him go. I don't get that, especially when you have depth problems.
I think it's the Dallas Thomas situation, like we talked about yesterday. I just think, you know, you you saw what happened when the Thomas, they let him hang around, and it wasn't good. And I know Bodden is a different personality than him, but I just think that's, Bill's like, you're not going to do that to me again, regardless. If a guy doesn't want to play here, then he's going to be gone. Period. I think if he had to do it all over again, he would have done the same thing to a Dallas Thomas a lot quicker. To be honest with you, and I know he was a little more disruptive, but you know, I just that's Bill's philosophy. It's not like he's not going to get burned again. I don't disagree with what you're saying. It would have been interesting to see, but what if he's out there and just doesn't give a crap? And you know, really, I mean, I know it couldn't have got much worse.
Well, that's what I think, Pete. But I think he was out there and he didn't give a crap.
Yeah, well, I do think he didn't. But I'm saying, what if he was out there on Sunday against Pittsburgh and, you know, as badly as some of the secondary get,
if you're actually out there, though, if you're actually out there playing and you have an attitude that I don't give a crap, you don't belong in the NFL.
True, but we see it week in and week out with a lot of players, though, unfortunately. You see it every week.
Well, I don't know. I have a little more pride than that. I mean, you know.
Oh, well, you do, of course. But I'm talking about, Randy Moss was guilty of it at times.
Yeah,
there have been other people.
And now
other,
we want to bring him back? Oh, my God, have we come full circle.
Price, 4 touchdowns this Sunday, yeah. But I tell you, you want to hear a funny stat, and this is, I'm coming up in the 5 o'clock hour today, Michael Eisen from Giants.com.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw this stat. If you did, tell me, because I don't want to ruin it. But guess what the the rest of the NFL, guess what the record is when a running back rushes for 100 yards?
What the record is?
Yeah, against an opposing team.
You mean now for the team that has the rusher or the team that's defending the rusher?
I'll just tell you this. Giants this year are 4-0 in games where their opposing running back rushes
for
100 yards.
Really?
The rest of the league in that same situation, 9-45.
So the Giants are 4-0 when they allow a 100-yard rusher.
And I watched the game this morning, the Giants game from Miami, and I thought that Reggie Bush was going to rush for 8,000 yards in that game.
Yeah.
And there you have it. And then I went back and watched a couple of other highlights, the snippets you get on NFL Network, the local stuff. And that's an unbelievable statistic.
That is. That's a little bit of a shocker. Talk about a statistical anomaly.
Yeah.
All right. Pete's coming up momentarily. Let me finish up with two other quick notes here. Cavern in Gainesville says, guys, I still trust in Bill the coach. Bill the GM bothers me big time. Bill the GM is wasting the last great years of Brady's career by surrounding him with terrible talent or scheme on defense. This defense forces Brady to have provide our team with nothing short of 24 points or we lose. There's no other coach I'd rather have, so no way I want to fire him. I just wonder if Bill's message is falling on ears that sound him out. That's obviously a good one. And then Jerry in New Hampshire says, in Bill, do we trust? If one game brings out this level of despair, you must be borderline manic depressive. No, I'm okay. Let me turn it around. If you don't trust Bill with Brady and the Crafts, who do you propose as a better coach and GM to lead this team? You know what? I don't have the answer to that.
Did they lose 65-0 on Sunday? Were they not 5-1 going into that game? Did they not stop McFadden? Did they not play pretty well against Dallas and the Jets?
Stop it, Pete. You're ruining my argument.
And San Diego, Miami. It's one game they lost by 8 points, technically 6 on the road to a pretty good Steeler team. Relax!
All right. Pete's coming up next. Thanks to Chris Price from WEEI.com. And thanks to Bob Papa, the voice of the New York Giants, and Eric Scalavino, PFW. Tomorrow in the playbook, Russell S. Baxter and you. We look at week 9 around the NFL. More on the Pats and Giants. Same Pats time, same Pats channel.